The following is intended for mature audiences only. Discretion is advised.
I remember when I was in like middle school, there was a girl bully and there was a guy bully. And the girl bully was friends with me because she thought I was funny. So when the guy bully was picking on me one day, she went up to him and made him swear to leave me alone.
That's great.
Because he was afraid of her.
That's funny.
My humor has always been my saving grace.
They ended up getting married. Isn't that crazy?
And now they're in love.
Kids are the worst, man. I don't know why we do a podcast about kids, but anyway.
What's up, besties? Welcome back to a brand new episode of Child Like a Best with Mike Valdez. And you're never going to believe this, but I am still the second part of that title. I hope you're having a great week this week. If you want to eat cereal along with us, please do. The cereal that we have in this episode is Snoop Hoops Fruity Hoops with Marshmallows. This is an awesome cereal that partnered with Snoop Dogg, and I genuinely can't recommend this cereal more. It's so good, man. I'm not even getting paid to say this. It's genuinely such a good cereal. I mean, in fact, if you were to put me in a room and ask me what celebrity do you think would make a great cereal, I would probably say Snoop Dogg first. I mean, I'd probably say myself, but once everybody stared at me with glaze over their eyes, I'd then say Snoop Dogg. So yeah, I can't recommend it enough. They're not paying me to say this. I genuinely just think you should eat it. I don't know if you have had it before, but if you haven't, there's certainly places where you can get it. Like, for example, my website. If you go to my website right now, thekidfromup.com, there is a tab that says my favorite cereals, and it'll take you to an Amazon link to all of my favorite cereals, and you can do all of your Amazon shopping that you want. You can buy cereal, you can buy toilet paper, you can buy the Talk Boy from Home Alone 2, and you can do all that while you're supporting the show. So why not do it when you were gonna go on Amazon to buy something anyway? Support your favorite real life cartoon character, you know? I'm truly so excited for today's episode. Today's guest is Gina Brion. Gina is a stand-up comedian and actress who you may know from America's Got Talent, Alex Strangelove. She's worked with Gabriel Iglesias, Howie Mandel, Kevin James, and most importantly, you might know her from her special The Floor is Lava, which is actually one of my favorite specials from 2020. Gosh, this is such a great episode, and man, when I say that I really needed this episode, I really needed this episode. You know, we had a lot of laughs and a lot of nostalgia, and it was so awesome getting to chat with Gina. She's truly one of my favorite people working right now, and it was more than an honor to have her. I mean, I genuinely cannot say enough good things about this person. She's one of the funniest people and truly one of the kindest working right now. Now that I have all that out of the way, I don't want to hold you any longer. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the very funny and the very talented Gina Brion.
You met your husband on a cruise ship, and yes. Scott Henry, who is the head of Big Comedy Network, he's kind of been telling me like, oh, like he's the, you know, he's the reason why her and, you know, how
Scott, I was already dating
him. Yeah.
I was already dating my husband when I first met Scott.
Yeah.
But, I think what Scott was instrumental in was just making sure that the two of us had our heads on straight. I think that he was like, these two crazy kids, they met on a cruise ship,
right?
And they don't know what they're doing, and just making sure he was very protective, I think, of both of us, and just making sure that we weren't, you know, acting up. We were like his little cruise ship kids.
That's really cool, though. Like, I mean, and I assume, did he work on the cruise as well?
Yeah, my husband is a musician, so he was doing the dueling pianos on cruise. On
no
the cruise ship.
Way, that is so awesome. I'm a piano player as well.
Yeah, oh, get out of here, yeah.
That's super cool.
I literally become his biggest fan when I get to watch his shows. So.
Sure, yeah, that's incredible. I love that. Yeah, Scott does take credit for that. He also, he doesn't take credit for me. He usually always texts me, He usually always texts me, you know, Catherine thinks you're funny, but I still don't get it.
Wow. Wow. That's comics showing comics love.
Yeah, that's what that I know. Is.
We don't know how to love properly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a very rare comedian in that I've been in this business for a very long time, and I tell people when I like what they do, and like, oh. And sure, like I make jokes and things like that, but my jokes are never about like, you know, the quality of your stuff or like whatever, even though,
yeah.
and not to say that you shouldn't do that or whatever. It's just, I've seen in this business, not to get like super dark super quickly, but I've seen in this business how a lot of that could have been completely yep. swerved had we just been reminding people how funny they are
yeah.
and how worthy they are to be alive and, you know, things like that.
Yeah, so, like, I think so much could have been avoided. Just so much infighting, so much ridiculous mm-hmm. hatred that goes on. It's just like, we're all in the same struggle. I've always looked at it like that. Like, we are yes. all, you know, wanting stage time, wanting to grow, you know, wanting to get to that next level. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think it's a better way of handling things to be the person that reminds other comedians, other performers to yeah. take up space, to enjoy their time, and that you like what they do. And just that mm-hmm. encouragement alone, like, some people don't have that at all. They don't have any yeah. encouragement from anybody in their family or anybody close to them. So you may be the one person that offers that encouragement that changes a life drastically.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I completely agree with that. But I want to know more about you, Gina. I want to start from the very beginning. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the South Bronx. I grew up in a part of the Bronx that was, it's all the way down by the water. I was near Classon Point or Harding Park, if you know that area. Uh-huh. And, you know, I grew up in a house. And I grew up a stone's throw away from the project. So I would take my bike and I would go visit all my friends that lived out there and got to experience, you know, the really, like, people used to call my block Little Puerto Rico. So that's right. like, to give you an idea of what it was like, there were like chickens running around in my neighborhood and like yeah. stuff like that. Like, it was wild for people to come and see that. So yeah. that was my life at home. And then I'd go see my friends that lived in the projects and I'd get a different feel for what their life was like and the, you know, what they were looking out for when they left their houses.
Yeah. In fact, this is not shocking me at all because I'm Cuban. I live in Miami and I grew up in Little Havana. So this is very normal for me.
Yeah.
It's like to just have chickens running around and like, that's just what it was.
I was
like,
so shocked when people would come over and they'd be like, there are chickens in the middle of the street. And I'd be like, you don't got chickens in your there's no chickens in your neighborhood? There's no.
Yeah. And like during Christmas, they're like, why do you have a pig in your backyard? And I'm like, just wait.
You're going to find out. You're going to find out soon. You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah. I could never don't bring my white girlfriends to my house. So. Yeah.
Don't name it, Amber. Don't name it.
Yeah. But that's amazing. I love that. And what about when you were in school? Like, what kind of a kid would you say that you were? Who did you sit with at the lunch table?
Goodness. I was very shy. I was incredibly sure. shy. I was really insecure. I was a chubby kid with braces and mm-hmm. at one point braces and glasses, reading glasses, which I still wear today, but I think I rock them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And hey, I was same. Just very, I was just a very like to myself kid, but I was always like, I was always funny. So
yeah.
like the bullies, I remember when I was in like middle school, there was a girl bully and there was a guy bully. And the girl bully was friends with me because she thought I was funny.
Mm.
So when the guy bully was picking on me one day, she went up to him and made him swear to leave me alone. Like,
God,
she,
that's great.
Because he was afraid of her.
Yeah, that's funny.
My humor has always been my saving grace.
They ended up getting married. Isn't that crazy?
And now they're in love. And they run a school of their own, you guys.
Yeah, they run a school of their own. They just traumatize a bunch of kids yes. for the rest of their lives. I love that. Yeah, kids are the worst, man. I don't know why we do a podcast about kids, but anyway.
I... It's so funny when you're not a kid and you're observing like child behavior.
Yeah.
It sort of comes back to you where you're like, oh, I used to do that. Like now that I have a son, I'm like, oh, I used to do that. I remember when I used to do that. And it just makes you go, oh God. Yeah. And you start, for me, it's made me understand, oh, I used to do that because X, Y, Z. And then I'd be like, maybe my son is doing that because of X, Y, Z. And it just makes you understand a little bit more of why kids are the way they are.
Sure. How old is your son now?
He's three.
Okay. So he's like starting to like kind of, you know, his brain is forming. Like he's not just tactile anymore, right?
Oh yeah. He said something to my husband yesterday. It was so funny. I forget what my husband, or a couple days ago, my husband asked him something and he went, I don't think that's appropriate. You're three. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. He heard that from somebody. Yeah, like
he was like, I don't think that's appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, when I was, I mean, that, I wasn't three, but I remember I had to have been, like, five. Like, my mom was like, you can't watch Home Alone anymore, because I would keep calling police officers and using the talk boy, and I would say the exact lines that he says.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and so cops would just show up at my house, and they would be like, where's all the booby traps and all this stuff? Why is there some like abuela with like with a nightgown? You know, it was a wild thing. So
that's so funny.
Yeah, but like in a weird way, like it's a beautiful thing, because that childlike wonder is something that we lose when we become adults. Because
I hate that about adulthood. It's one of my least favorite things about adulthood.
Yeah,
is losing that childhood wonder. I think I still have it. Like I try to hold on to it and allow my son to have it too.
What are some things that you would say that you do to remind yourself to keep it, even on stage? Like what are some things?
On stage, I allow myself to have fun.
Good.
I allow myself to kind of, you never forget that it's work, but when you allow yourself to have fun, like, you know, sometimes I'll say something and the audience will get it and it'll be something off the top of my head and we'll all just have a laugh at something like that. And I just let myself fully enjoy the moment and just kind of be there. I think kids are very much present in what they're doing. You very rarely find a kid that's not 100% locked in whatever they're doing. And I think I do my best to try to achieve that, especially on stage. I just want to be locked in to this moment right here.
Yeah.
With this crowd.
Yeah, of course. And like like you said, I mean, allow yourself to play, like to be silly.
Yes.
You know?
To play and be silly. We're all big kids.
Yeah, that's the reason why we got into this job, is because we like playing and we found a way to make money with it.
We're giant kids. Even the most sardonic, like sarcastic comic who just seems very dry, we're all giant children.
Yeah.
And that's just how we played. That's just how we play. Like, it's so funny because every interaction, now that I'm on playgrounds more often with my son, it's like every interaction with a group of comics also looks like every interaction with a group of kids.
Sure.
Where it's fascinating to just watch people like in a circle, and then like there'll be two kids laughing at the most ridiculous things, and then another group of kids that looks like they don't even acknowledge each other's presence because they're just all sitting in the same area staring at a phone or all playing with different things. Wow. And then you just look at adults and you're like, oh my God, we're doing the same thing.
Yeah. It's
we're just doing it with different toys.
It's pretty ridiculous, like how like even down to like how I always used to say that you really remind yourself as an adult when you're a kid, when you start arguing with another adult, because you're like, oh, like we are so stupid. like everything about this is stupid.
After every single argument I've ever had with anyone ever, I'm always like, ugh.
Yeah.
Why? Why did that even happen right now? Like, how did it escalate to that ridiculousness?
Yeah, which is wild, because like, yeah, it's just it's something that we were talking about in the beginning. Like, it's this business, you know, and not even, you know, being a comedian, but like, you know, you're an actress as well, and so am I, and I'm an actor, and even more so in that business, the bitterness is just so palpable that
and
it's
just
like
the nastiness. Yeah, it's just
it
like,
has nothing, but it has nothing to do with anybody. Like, it's just like, you know,
everybody
and
is literally doing their best to protect themselves,
right?
And that's what it is. When that bitterness and that nastiness comes out in people, it's because they feel a threat to themselves in some way, whether it's an emotional threat, an intellectual threat, an actual physical threat, if things get too heated, or a perceived threat to your beliefs or whatever systems you hold dear. And that's where it gets to the boiling point, because you're obviously your brain is trained to defend you. So if you feel that somebody is attacking you in any way, shape, or form, you're going to fire back at them as if a real physical threat was there, even if there was no real physical threat.
Right.
That's the level of fear we feel when I had this conversation with a friend of mine. It's so funny. I've seen so many arguments happen because if you're talking about a certain thing, pick a topic, if you're talking about religion or something, you are talking about the belief, this theory, this religion. But the person who you are talking to, who may or may not adhere to that belief, cannot separate them, their personhood, from the belief. So the belief is questioned, meaning you're questioning their personhood.
Right.
And because of that, they go on the attack and they're like, no, we were just talking about this system of beliefs. Like, I'm just breaking that down. But we can't separate ourselves from that. And I see so many things that people argue about that just fall into that same issue.
Man, that is so well said. I've never thought about it like that, because really, it's truly, even down to something as stupid as, like, you like Coldplay? Like,
yes.
and it, like, hurts someone's feelings? It really is about that, where it's like, you know, a person identifies with something for whatever reason, like it could be a television show or a, you know, whatever, you
or
know,
a celebrity, and, like somebody yeah, who's celebrity, like, yeah. I love when my guy friends would be like, oh, I love, you know, so I love Tyson. He was a part of my childhood. And I'm like, did he come to your birthday parties?
Yeah.
How was he a part of your childhood? No, he wasn't. He wasn't a part of your childhood. So let's separate yourself from that for a second. That's how deep it goes, though, where we really, and I get it. Look, I'm a fan of a couple of people. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, look, I love Mariah Carey, but if tomorrow Mariah Carey was arrested for fist fighting puppies, I'm not going to defend her like she's a blood relative. I'm going to be like, damn, now I got to get rid of a lot of Mariah Carey swag.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, like, I mean, that's true. I mean, in there's only so much that we can do. However, it's real weird. Like, the whole, like, all of it is just because, like, what's it called? Like, I heard someone say this perfectly, where, like, back then, it's not like this anymore because media has changed so much, but back then it was like when movies were out, it was like this person was a celebrity. They were untouchable. When they were on television, it was like, oh, we could probably talk to them if they're at an airport or something, because you're at my house every day, you know.
There's
so like
levels.
And if you're on the radio, then that person's your friend. Like, so
if you're
now,
a comedian too, like how many times, like, I've seen so many people be put in awkward situations because people are just huge fans of comedians, and we're so accessible. We are so accessible. Even the people at the Kevin Hart level and, you know, George Lopez and all and Gabriel Iglesias, like, all of them are still accessible because we're still walking around, and you'll see people have bumped into these people in the street and just tried to take over their personal space, everything. So it's like, I think comedians, I'm not going to say we get it the worst, but I do think comedians, because you're so accessible, people will just roll up on you anywhere.
I think, you know, I heard it said on a podcast that when it comes to being an actor, what happens is you are now, your body is an image, essentially. So when you're a comedian, you're a character. Like, yes, it's you. But, like, I've said this many times on the podcast, and, you know, not to, like, you know, pull the wool out of people's eyes, but, like, that's not who we really are.
The 10th degree of all of our frustrations, annoyances. Mm-hmm. It's going to be us to an amped up percentage, because that's where we get to kind of play. we get to kind of be like, this is, look at how ridiculous frustration looks.
Right.
Look at how insane hatred or love, either or, depending, like, if you hate parades, like, that's ridiculous. How could you hate parades? Like, just, it's showing the extreme to people so that they understand what the extreme even looks like in them.
Yeah, exactly. And then because of that, then people in a weird way kind of feel this weird kinship with you, even though it's not you, it's your character that you've created. Mm-hmm. And now they're like, and then there's like people that are super weird and like aren't like consenting with touching and like, you know, things like that. Like, it's,
yeah, people get really weird with that. And it's, especially, it's so funny because I think people thought after the whole slap thing with Will Smith and people were like, oh my God, what are comedians gonna do? We've been getting slapped, y'all. Like, we comics have been arrested. People have gotten into fights after shows.
Oh,
people get up and shout at you during the show. Like, it's wild the stuff that we're going through, but let that incident defined comedy for that moment. And I remember I was doing a gig in Florida and this woman came up to me and she was like, oh, you're the comedian, I should just slap you, right? Like, literally, this was after the Will Smith thing.
Wow.
And I was like, I don't suggest it.
Wow.
Literally got on stage. I was like, for anybody who thinks they're gonna storm the stage, I am not as polite as Chris Rock, and I will hit you with a mic stand in the face.
In what world is that respectful or funny to say that to someone?
Like what, in what world of this, like, what incredibly privileged world, that should give you a hint as to what world, in what incredibly privileged
now world. Now I know what part of Florida you were in.
Yeah. Now you know.
Yeah. Oh, trust me, I know the gas station where it all changes. Like, it's,
you know, the gas station where you got to start looking over your shoulder.
Yes, dude. I'm telling you. I'm telling you. I know.
You start to feel that whole one of these things is not like the other.
Yes.
You're like, it's, but yeah, I'm the problem.
Yeah, that's insane, man. People are so weird, man. I don't know. Yeah. And you're definitely right when it comes to like being a comedian, when it comes to like getting weird interactions. And I've said this many times to many females that are in the business. I do not envy women. I'm kind of glad I'm a male comedian because you have to go through three times as much as I do. You know what I mean? Like,
I have been followed.
Yeah.
In my hotel, I have had people show up to my hotel that know that I'm there somehow. Mm-hmm. It's scary every time.
Of course.
Because it's like, this is, you're just like, let me double, triple lock my door. I now have this thing that I take on the road with me that is an alarm, and I put it on my door so that if somebody tries to break in the middle of the night, and you just... And people might look at it and be like, that's kind of extreme. I'm like, except I've had people try to get in my room in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Whether they were drunk people or malicious people, it's still just as scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it was like, you can act like it's hyped up, but it's not a lived experience for the person that's acting like it's hyped up.
Yeah, I was doing a few shows with Jesse Kirsten, and she, you know, I hope I'm not telling this story out of school, Jessica, but she had someone who, during all of our shows, was sending baskets of apples to her dressing room and her hotel. And so she was like, listen, this is, and she was like telling me, she's like, this is really fucking scary. Like,
and
I was like trying to make it funny. Like, I was like every time somebody, you know, like the security guard would come in, I'd be like, if they bring apples, like just, you know, kick them out or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I would like make jokes about it and like to kind of make her laugh. But like, I mean, I kind of got to experience it firsthand where I was just like, that is so freaking weird that somebody would do that. And like,
it's just
why?
So bizarre the information that people can get, you know, and how they can find out where, that's why it's kind of scary. I think part of the reason that comedy itself can be scary, especially when you get to a certain level, it's like, what's to stop anybody from harming you? What's to stop it? I mean, Chris Redd got punched in the face in front of the Comedy Cellar. You know, I've seen people get into altercations out in front of almost every New York comedy club. Some people get into it with the audience member. Sometimes the audience member waits for you after the show. I've had people call me and be like, hey, are you still around? Because I think there's an audience member waiting for me and I don't want to leave by myself. Yep. And I'm like, this is how crazy it can get.
Yeah.
Because we're so accessible. Comedy is so accessible. Once somebody knows where the green room is, I've had people walk into the green room. It's so wild. And it gets scary, but like, if you're with good people and you just let people know, like I always do the courtesy of like letting the security know if I feel like they should be on high alert. If I'm like, hey, this person, you know, said they were stopping by the show, but I'm a little weirded out by them. So like, just stay close when I'm taking pictures and like, you know, just telling them stuff like that. If people get out of line, I don't even mess with that. If you heckle during one of my shows, you will be kicked out. You will get a warning and then you will be kicked out because I'm not letting any of these people think that they can ruin a comic set. I don't care if it's my set, the host set, the feature set, every comic on that stage will be respected. So if I see, I've actually done it before where I've walked up to security and had somebody kicked out because they were messing with the host or the feature. Because I'm like, you're not going to stop ruining it for everybody.
I love this. I mean, as someone who has been featuring for quite some time, as you were saying all of that, I just wanted to play like inspirational strings because it felt so like, oh my gosh, I feel validated. This is so good.
I let the club know whenever I go to like a newer place, because every place that I've been to already knows this, but I always tell the newer places, I'm like, I don't know how you handle hecklers, but you're going to want to handle them before I get on stage.
Yeah.
I want them gone before I get on stage. And I'm very honest with them. I'm like, I am not paid as a bouncer. I am not paid to police your club. I am paid as a performer. So my time will be respected on that stage.
Yeah.
And every performer should be treated the same way.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it's so weird because like, you know, New York, one of the things I love about New York is like, you know, the Comedy Cellar, like they have a 2-drink maximum there. And, you know, I don't want to like put people on blast or anything like that, but there's a lot of clubs here where it's pretty clear that they're just trying to sell alcohol and food. And when you do that, it's just going to make the night more difficult. You know what I mean? Like, and then my job becomes glorified babysitting, you know, where it's just like, I can't even be funny anymore. Like now I just have to, you know, talk to some guy because for whatever reason, like he doesn't want to get past something I said or whatever, you know? And it's
because
just,
they don't agree with a point that you made.
Exactly.
It's so funny how childish we are. And it depends. Like there are some people that are intentionally like poking the bear when it comes to the audience.
Yeah.
And those people are intentionally saying like stuff that's going to instigate and cause something, and to each their own. Do what you want on that stage, as long as you're willing to accept the consequences of that action and realize that people are going to start coming to your shows expecting that from you. And now where do you go from there? If you're going to keep poking the bear, you have to keep poking and poking, find out what the new offensive thing is and poke and poke and poke and poke. And then there are people that are genuinely just trying to share their life and whatever connections that they feel an audience can make with their life story, and just going, hey, has anybody else been through this with divorce or been through this with like this? And I'm not saying everything has to be autobiographical, but when you're up there and you're trying to connect with people and then people start getting upset because they don't hold the same beliefs, it's like, I'm not asking you to. I'm not in any way asking you to. This moment is about me.
Yeah.
It's not about you. So you can listen to my beliefs and still not agree with me, and we're cool.
Man, you know, and I say this with all due respect, I feel like I'm talking to a sister right now that's just like, it's so inspirational because like, it really is just so inspiring because that's, you know, I was listening to a podcast that you did maybe a couple of years ago, and you were talking about something that I was like, man, I've never felt so validated when it comes to this, where you were like, I hate it when comics say that when you bomb, it wasn't the audience's fault. And I was just like, yeah, sometimes it is that people are shitty.
I think cocky to say it's never the audience's fault, because that to me means one of two things. Either that means you adjust who you are, both artistically and as a person, to fit the audience, or you're so delusional that you don't think you've ever had a bad set. That is delusion. Yeah. I mean, if it's on a spiritual growth level and you're like, I've never had a bad set because I've learned lessons, then cool. Great.
Yeah.
But the fact is we're all between you and God.
It doesn't matter between like the room.
Comedy is always going to be this business where it's like, everybody is going to come in and like what they like. Some people like this guy. Some people like that girl. Somebody might like this person. And then the next day you might see a super famous comic. Do you know how many comics I watched bomb in New York that are well-known comics? And it's like, understand that, yes, you're looking at the people on the list of whoever the goats are of comedy. And it's like, all of them have had bad sets, because sometimes the audience just doesn't like you. It doesn't matter. They just don't like you. Dave Chappelle has a whole bit in his special about having bombed in Detroit.
Yeah.
And it's like, does that not convince you that at some point you have to accept the fact that comedy is subjective and the audience will get upset or not like you or not even like your face?
Yeah. That's very true. Yeah. I have a pretty unlikable face, but I'm kidding. My face is the only thing selling tickets, to be honest.
But when you're talking to, like, you know how when you would see crowd work done and a comic would say, you look like every 80s movie bad guy.
Sure.
It's because people present a certain way, and then our perception of them, we're like, oh, that guy looks like a douche. I bet that guy's a douche.
Right.
Or, oh, look at that person. They have such a sweet face. I bet they're so nice.
Yeah.
We put our projections on those people immediately. And as a performer, you have to know that when you're on stage, because you're like, how do I present? I think Daniel Tosh and Anthony Jeselnik know that they present as dudes that could have been in a frat or could have been, like, they know how they present. They're not blind to it. I think Tosh is probably the most brilliant person I've seen navigate around how he looks, sounds, and just do it effortlessly and so perfectly. And because he knows perception is part of the performance.
Mm-hmm. Pardon the brief interruption, besties, but me and my buddy Alf just wanted to talk to you about Childlike Wonder. Childlike Wonder is the official merchandise store of Mike Valdez and of Childlike at Best. As you can see here, there are some shirts with my face on them that say comedy's favorite cartoon, as well as the Viewmaster collection, which is one of my favorite designs that we have. You've seen me rock many a t-shirt from the Viewmaster collection. Another is some of the church merch that we have. We have a shirt that just says church camp. We also have a crew neck that says unspoken prayer request, because as good Christian kids, we all had those unspoken prayer requests that were definitely rumors about Stacy or whatever person we knew growing up in the church. I'm so excited about this collection, and I'm so excited to release it to all of the besties. So if you want to support the show or support me in any way, please just go to childlikewonder.co and grab yourself a tee or a crew neck and tag me on Instagram. I'll repost you. I'm super excited for you guys to get into this. So thank you guys for supporting, and thank you guys for being so incredibly amazing. This episode is also brought to you and will always be brought to you by our good friends over at the Crunch Cup. If you are a day one Childlike at Best listener, you know about the Crunch Cup. The Crunch Cup is a portable cereal cup that keeps your cereal crunchy. It's a tumbler that separates your cereal from the milk, which is amazing and such a great advancement for us cereal lovers, because I am an anti-soggy cereal person personally. In fact, so much so, they actually have a crew neck that I'm really wanting to get called the Anti-Soggy Cereal Club. You can get crunch clips for your cereal bag. You can also get a bowl to separate milk from your cereal, or you can just have chips and salsa if that's what you want. To purchase the Crunch Cup or any of the Crunch Cups merch, just like this amazing crew neck I was talking about, go to thecrunchcup.com and use promo code MikeValdez10, as you can see right here, MikeValdez10, to get 10% off of your order. Support your love for the show and be a part of the Anti-Soggy Cereal Club by going to thecrunchcup.com and using promo code MikeValdez10. Thanks to the Crunch Cup for always being such a supporter of Childlike at Best. Now back to the show. When you were in high school and stuff, were you, I think you had talked about how you were like in drama class and like things like that. Were you heavily in the church as well?
I mean, I'm Latina, so.
So, of course. So, yes.
Well, I grew up in the church. It's so funny. The first church we went to, we were like the only Latino family in the church. Mm-hmm.
And really?
My mom was probably, because my mom has olive skin. She stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think there was one other woman that came later on who was Latina, and we were like, yay!
Yeah.
But for the most part, it was mainly a white Presbyterian church that I went to at first. Mm-hmm. And then I went to a Spanish Presbyterian church that completely in my neighbor, like a block away from where I lived.
Mm-hmm.
And the vibe was totally different for both of those churches, even though it was the same like sect of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was apostolic for quite a few years, but that was in my adulthood. Mm-hmm. The church was always a part of my life. I think I see the good and the bad in organized religion.
Same.
Now, as a person, well, I see the good in terms of, hey, don't be a crap person. Mm-hmm. Let's treat each other with respect and dignity. It's so funny because I heard this quote that I can't get out of my head the other day,
mm-hmm.
On the internet. Some famous spiritual speaker person said it, and mm-hmm. it just reminded me of my childhood in the church, where he said, you know, and this was his take on when Jesus said, "I am the way." He said he meant I am the way to this life. Be like me. You have the ability to be like me. And it just made me think of, that was always my take on Christianity, of like, just be a good part, like the whole thing. It's just, don't be a crap person, which is great. Yes, you should not be a crap person. But what I don't like are all of the man-made things that are put into this beautiful kind of idea of, don't be, just be good to each other, just be loving towards each other, just be kind to each other. And then everything else of like, that peopleized it, where it was like, except these people. And maybe not these people, because, and not those people. No, people.
Yeah, and Jesus, Jesus was such a simple person when you think about it. However, the simple things are the hardest when you think about it, because you know,
we overcomplicate them. We want to believe they're more complicated.
Like, that quote that you said, I saw something similar in a meme, because I'm a millennial, and it was and in the meme, it's Jesus saying to his disciples, love God and love other people. And then someone was like, but what about the gays and all the other races?
I think I have that meme.
And then he goes,
saved.
Did I stutter? just love God and other people. It's not that hard.
There was no amendment to that. It was love other people.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, you know, and having grown up in the church, it's kind of a, you know, it's a good thing. I kind of see it as a privilege in a lot of ways, growing up in the church and growing up in Miami, because mm-hmm. because stuff like loving people, and especially loving people that don't look like me or things like that, is just so normal.
Yeah.
To where it's like, when I don't see that, I'm like, what is wrong with you? You know what I mean? Where it's like, I didn't think people like that existed unless they were like in movies or something. You know?
You don't think it exists. And then like, you see it in real time, in real life, and you're just mm-hmm. like, disgusted.
Yeah, I've seen it done to my best friends.
I've seen it done to comics I've worked with.
Yeah.
I've seen it done to people in restaurants. I've seen so many, so much disgusting human behavior that I'm like, we really need to elevate the way that we treat each other and the way that we speak to each other and the way that we understand each other. Because right now it's a hot mess.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of a hot mess, what were your favorite snacks growing up?
Oh God, I was the worst. So it's so funny. You would think that as a kid I smoked weed with all of the freaking snacks that I liked.
I love this. You came to the right place.
I used to, my favorite thing, oh my God, when I was a teenager, this was my favorite thing. Doritos and Reese's peanut butter cups, like eating together. Like,
really?
Nacho cheese Doritos and Reese's peanut butter cups. This is why I say, you would think, if I gave you a list of things, you'd be like, was this a pothead's list of things? No, this was just me in my teenage years and in my younger years being like, I used to make fake Rice Krispie treats. They weren't Rice Krispie treats. I would take like Rice Krispies and syrup and peanut butter and mix it in a bowl and eat it like it was Rice Krispies. Like, it was, I think about it now and I'm like, But back then, and Entenmann's chocolate donuts, they slap. To this day, they slap.
Isn't it hilarious how you named all of that and it could give us all acid reflux now?
Yeah. Like, I can't have any of that now, by the way. None of that. I can't eat. I will not touch a Dorito. Not.
Like, all of that stuff just made me have acid reflux.
I got a little nauseous just saying it.
Yeah, yeah. But like, I mean, and that's kind of the weird thing was like, you know, being a kid, I feel like our bodies were different. Like we could eat radioactive sludge in many ways, you know, like, I mean, we would eat Twinkies with, you know, Hostess pies and stuff like that with like custard that has so much preservatives in it that it's like, it might have gone expired yesterday, you know, and it's like something from 95, you know? So like, it's wild, you know, the amount of, of stuff.
I think about it when I think about the stuff I used to drink. We used to have, I don't know if they had this everywhere, so forgive me if they do, in every hood, in every neighborhood.
Oh, I know.
We used to have what we used to call quarter waters.
Okay.
Quarter water. And
love those.
They're like, the flavors weren't real flavors. Like,
no.
It wasn't anything that existed.
It was just blue, red, purple. Yes. That's it.
And they used to burn my throat, and I didn't care. I'm like, why does it burn my throat?
Yes. Quarter waters are awesome. Yes. Yes. Quarter waters were
an addiction
awesome.
For a little bit, for sure.
Yes. Yeah, and I mean, and you know, it's so funny because you only see them in certain parts of the hood. You know what I mean?
Like, yes, you couldn't find them everywhere.
Pete Holmes has a great joke about this where he's like, if you ever feel like you're in a really bad part of town, Google a Panera Bread.
That's so funny.
Because he's like, they will never put a Panera Bread or a Barnes & Noble in a bad part of town.
They won't. He's not wrong. He is not wrong. He is not wrong.
Yeah, and like, but that's the thing. It's like 9 times out of 10, though, like the snacks are from other countries and they're the best.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, Mexican candies that you never heard of. And like,
Mexican,
you know,
candies were my favorite for like,
yes.
The tamarindo. I love anything.
Oh, it's
with,
so good. Yes.
Anything with chamoy, anything with tajin, like,
Tajin has like become a new TikTok thing, and it's like we've been on this for years.
Like, it is. I'm like, everybody on TikTok, calm down.
Yeah, we've been on this for years, dude. Like, it's now people are like putting it in their water
to get on board. You were slow.
Yeah. We like to talk about cereal on this show as well, because I feel like cereal is the food that encompasses childhood. What were your favorite cereals growing up?
Oh God, growing up, it was literally all the sugary cereals. I was to this day, I battle being a sugar fiend. I would say my favorite was Peanut Butter Crunch, Captain Crunch, Peanut Butter Crunch.
Yeah.
And then Crunch Berries. But they used to cut the roof of my mouth because those damn freaking squares.
Yeah.
And then, Frosted Flakes was a rarity. Like, I was really not allowed to have Frosted Flakes. My mom did the bootleg thing of getting cornflakes and you put sugar in your cornflakes. And she was like, now you got Frosted Flakes. I was like, this is not the same. But it's drinking that cornflakes sugar water afterwards, sugar milk. Oh,
yeah.
Amazing.
It was so good. Yeah. Why
Frosted Flakes to this day, I sometimes treat myself to Frosted Flakes.
I just I'm trying to wrap my head around why not Frosted Flakes, but you could have peanut butter crunch. What was it like, because Frosted Flakes cost more than corn flakes?
That was probably part of it. I think that Frosted Flakes is probably the most expensive.
That makes more sense.
To my mom, it was just literally like covered in sugar. And I'm like, yes, that's why I like it.
Yeah, yes, Captain Crunch that's healthy.
Yeah.
Like,
they probably slapped the advertisers probably slapped a healthy for your something label on it, and my mom was like, "Well, it's better than Frosted Flakes. That doesn't have that label."
You know what's insane? I saw a video recently of someone showing their cereal aisle in Europe, and our cereals have stickers on them, like stickers that you put on cigarettes that are like, if you eat this is going to kill you.
By the way, we've put a lot of bad stuff in here. Enjoy.
Yeah, it's wild, man. I mean, and now at the end of the day, like, I feel like cereal, of course, it encompasses childhood and things like that. But I feel like a lot of cereals are being made for people my age. Like, millennials are really the ones eating cereal, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So that's why they're making these nostalgia comebacks, and they're like, oh, it's the retro recipe of this, even though it doesn't taste like it used to. Like, no. It's so many crazy things. Like in fact, I was just going to talk to you about this. Snoop Dogg has his own line of cereal.
I love Snoop Dogg. What is Snoop Dogg's cereal? I do. I love Snoop Dogg so much.
Well, I love that you love Snoop Dogg, because every episode of this podcast, I like to review a box of cereal with my guest. And I chose this cereal specifically for you. This is Snoop cereal.
No way.
I'm dead serious.
Fruity Hoops with marshmallows.
Yeah, dude. He has three different flavors. So it's this one, and then he has a it's on one of these sides here. It's a Cinnamon Toast Crunch kind of variety of one, and then one that is like a Frosted Mini Wheats type of deal. I got all three of them.
I will trust Snoop's cereal because he's a weed smoker, and I'm going to be like, I trust anybody because food tastes so different if you're as high as Snoop is half the time.
Yeah. And it's honestly, I love this brand deal. I think it's a really cool thing. I mean, what's it called? There's a maze on the back, which is something that does not happen very often.
So adorable.
Yeah, I love it. And one of the crazy things too is like, I think some of it goes to like a canine positivity team or something. Aww, I guess so.
Essentially,
you are helping dogs by buying this cereal, and you're supporting Snoop Dogg. Come on, man! This is like the greatest brand deal of all time. Like, you know,
I love it. That's amazing.
I mean, I haven't had the cereal yet. I just bought it today, but I can't imagine that it's gonna be bad.
No, because I think it's probably gonna taste delicious.
Yeah, because like, I like Fruit Loops already, and most people do, and like my sister always says this too. She's like, Fruit Loops are good, but when they're the best is when you put marshmallows on them. And I'm like, well, Snoop knows what he's talking about then.
Yeah,
because that's literally what it is,
essentially what it is right there.
Yeah, I love it so great. Yeah, so
I can't wait till you try it. You got to let me know.
Well, yeah, I will let you know. I will tell you this. I did have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cereal today. And it was not good. It was,
No. Okay, what was bad about it?
Everything, just everything, like
just the overall existence of it.
Just the overall existence of it. Yeah, like I made a funny like a kind of review thing, you know, for TikTok because that's the way of the world now. And
of course,
I was just like, yeah, and I was just like, you know, it. Unfortunately, what this is it doesn't have staying power. Like it's a serial that was made knowing that it's going to promote a movie. And that's the only reason, which like,
oh, wow. Yeah.
Something. And I don't know if you've gone through this, but have you ever made a decision in the cereal aisle? And after having one bowl, you're like, I have made a giant mistake. And then your mom is like, you have to finish this whole box.
Yes.
Like, yeah. What cereal was that for you?
It was one of the Kashi cereals. And it was when on my healthy cereal kick. And I think it was like a barley and something. And it was so tasteless.
Ugh.
Like it and don't get me wrong, Kashi has some delicious cereals. But this one in particular.
Their granola is great.
I took it home and it tasted like nothing. It was like eating cardboard.
Yeah.
It was nothing. And I was like, this is and I have to finish this. I bought this. I have to finish this cereal.
Yeah. Yeah, man, if you make a mistake in the cereal aisle, tough shit. Like, that's
you're
like,
eating that, so you better find a way to enjoy it.
You gotta get that sugar out. Yeah, give it to the dog or something. You gotta find something, you know? Yeah, I completely agree with you. Yeah, that, so, unfortunately, that cereal, that is one of those cereals for me where it's like, if I was a kid, I would have been like, man, this sucks. Like I have to eat this entire box now. It's like an apple cinnamon flavored cereal, which was not something I was expecting. Doesn't that seem weird to you with like Ninja Turtles? Like
it's very off.
Right? It just seems weird. Like you're just like, okay, like I mean, I'm not expecting like pizza flavored cereal or anything,
no,
but like
a Fruity Pebbles type
exactly,
cereal like, would have made more sense. Like that would have made more sense where you'd have been like, oh, it's a fun cereal, just like it's a fun movie. Like
exactly. Quite literally what Snoop Dogg did is what Ninja Turtles should have done.
Yes, 100%.
Just
because
done
Ninja
that.
Ninja Turtles is like, ooh, like apple cinnamon. What are we? Ugh. That's practically oatmeal. Look, I'm fine with apple cinnamon as a taste, but it's a very grown-up taste to have in a cereal. Like,
yeah.
You're not Apple Jacks. Relax.
Yes. Completely agreed. I love that. You know, I want to talk more about comedy with you. You started when you were 14. Is that the truth?
Well, I fell in love with comedy at 14. I started closer to like 17 writing stand-up. And then performed at my first club when I was when I had just turned 18. But I was watching stand up and basically writing stand up material at like 17 and performing it for like my friends, like at school. I would perform for them. All my theater friends, we'd be like standing out in front of the theater and I'd take out my hairbrush and I just start doing some comedy in a very nerdy, dorky way. And that was kind of like, I fell so hard for stand up that to this day I'm a comedy nerd. And
yeah,
like,
same.
And oh my God, my best friend makes fun of me because he just knows how I am. And somebody will ask a comedy question and he'll just be like, here she goes.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, she's about to go in.
Man,
I can't help it. I've loved it forever.
I'm literally the same way. In fact, so much so that I didn't want to become a comedian because I respected comedy so much. Like, I mean, I've been an actor my whole life. I've been doing it professionally for about 15 years. Mm. And that was my main thing. I went to LA, I got a manager, and she was like, you need to take improv classes. And I couldn't afford them. So I did what any person would do in this situation, which is do comedy, do stand up because it's free, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I did it. And the only reason why I fell in love with it was because I felt like I had to do it. And it was like, so I always tell people that it's not that I found comedy, it's that comedy found me in a lot of ways, because I've always wanted to do it. I just never thought that it would be good, or like, you know, I never thought that it would be as good as whoever. And the truth is, at the end of the day, maybe you are, maybe you're not, but those are one percenters. And, you know, and I'll tell you this, this story sound, it's going to start off sad, but it's just, it's better. So I went and I saw a comedian with my best friend, and we died laughing the whole time. And this was when I was maybe 3 years in, and I was like, man, I could never be that funny. Like, and we really had this conversation, and he was like, do you really think you could ever be that funny? And I was like, no, I don't really think I can. And then his wife told me, you know, you might not think that you can be that funny, but you can be that funny to somebody else. Meaning somebody else might think you are as funny as he was.
Yeah.
You know, which is more accurate. You know what I mean? Like,
that's
of course,
a possibility that we don't even examine. We always examine the negative side of it. We never examine the positive side, because we are literally trained that thinking positively of yourself is labeled cocky so quickly, because nobody differentiates between the two. And it's like, no, there is always a possibility that the person that you're watching on stage, you know, I think at each different point in my career, what I've noticed is when people started looking at me the way I used to look at other comics, and I was like, oh, oh, that's wild. I never thought I would be in this place. Cause I still look at other comics like, wow, that's amazing. And when you see somebody that's doing it to you, even if it's an audience member, that's just like, you're so amazing. You're just like, wow, I was so used to holding such a low opinion of my ability.
Yeah.
That it seeing something like that, that's so affirming. You're just like, oh, wow. You start to believe in the possibility of like, what if I could? I don't think we do what if enough. I think we should what if the crap out of all the positive things in life. Like, what if I did reach the highest of the heights of what I want in comedy? What if I did, you know, star in a movie or on a Broadway play?
Yeah.
Or something. Like, we don't give ourselves enough positive what ifs because we're so into the negative what ifs.
Yeah, that's so true, man. And in so many aspects, like not even just comedy, like actor and life and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, just it's a tough thing. But you're right in the sense of like comedians get it more, because a lot of people would be like, oh well, actors are cocky people, you know, like, and you kind of have to be that weird delusional. But comedians do have to also be delusional in that way too, but also present like they're not delusional, you know, because, you know, the fact of the matter is, like, we've been doing the same jokes, you know, for however long, and it worked 5 times, but this time it isn't, you know, so now we think that we suck, and it's like, but the other five times that it worked don't matter anymore for some reason, and like, we just let our brains win a lot. Like, I mean, it's something that happened to me yesterday. Like, I let my brain win so hard yesterday. Like, I mean, the amount of, you know, I've had a lot of people in my circle get some success, you know, and very good success. Like, they've been, you know, like on Saturday Night Live and, you know, things like that. And it's just like, and look, there's no bitterness. It's just like, it's a positive jealousy in a way where it's just like, oh man, I'm so happy for them. How do I get that? And then for some weird reason, my brain was just like, you'll never get it. You're never going to get it. You're never. And so I just like, I was having a conversation with my girlfriend, and I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm such a piece of garbage right now, because like, it's just like, all I can think about is just like how, you know, because my biggest fear, and not to like turn this into a therapy session, but my biggest fear, as a comedian is to be the guy who's funny, but who cares? That's my biggest fear. You know,
What? I think that's a more common fear than people are willing to admit, because so many people fall into that category. Mm-hmm. But I think the people that fall into that category are not the people that think, oh, that's the last thing I want to do, is that the people who fall into that category are usually people that are a little afraid of the growth that is required in comedy.
Yeah.
And so once you, and I've seen a lot of this, you find success on one level and then you stay there because that's where your success is. And you're so afraid to push it to that next level, unless you feel like your influence is so big that it doesn't matter how far up you go, but you've already, you're bringing the audience with you. But most people get into their comfort zone. Even people that reach what we would consider the pinnacle, the height of comedy, have to push themselves to stay outside of their comfort zone, because it would be very easy once you're making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to millions of dollars doing this, to stay and to stay stuck and stay stagnant. I think that's just a human thing. And I think it's also, you know, since I've been in therapy for so long, let me therapize.
Yeah, please.
That a lot of times those negative things are things that we heard and believed in our past.
Yeah.
And something about us like not being worthy, or something about us always growing up. I mean, I think most of us grew up with parents that, you know, had very lack mentality and were just trying to survive. And, you know, I don't fault them for it, but because they were stuck in survival mode, we are mentally still stuck in survival mode with a lot of the things that we do. And one of the things that I think keeps us in survival mode is the thought that we can't dream big, is the thought that we can't push it past what we believe. What if there were no limitations? If you gave yourself no limitations, what would you do with your career, with your life, if there were zero limitations?
Yeah. Hashtag Motivation Monday. I love it. I watch your TikToks, Gina. Thanks. Please, I watch your stuff. I know what's up.
I know what's up.
Yeah, I mean, what's so awesome too is like, and I, you know, just wrapping up here, I told you this before we started recording, but I want you to know, and I want it to be on the record. Like when I watched The Floor Is Lava, that your special on Amazon, which. I'm sure there's going to be a new special soon, and you know, I'm sure you can't talk
there
about it.
So sure we won't. Is.
Yeah, and we won't talk about it because we're probably not allowed to. So let's
not quite yet, but soon.
Yes, there's. I mean, honestly, this is a weird time to be alive when it comes to being a SAG actor, because I'm having actors and comedians, and I'm like, hey, remember when you were on that TV show that I can't talk about? Like, you know, like.
And that you can't do any promotion for?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, but when I was watching that, it was obviously so funny in so many different ways, and very relatable in many ways, which is, you know, and I say that and I hope it comes off as a compliment to, like, you know, because I'm trying to say this the right way without like sounding douchey, like, because like, and I think you know where I'm going with this, but like, because like there's female comedians and Gina Brion is just a comedian, you know what I mean? Like, and
I do.
And there are many, and to be fair, there are many female comedians who are just comedians, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And but then there are some where it is clear that they are leaning in. You know what I mean?
Well, and there's everybody. You know what? I always say different strokes for different folks.
Exactly.
There's an audience for everybody. And we all lean into what our strengths are and or what our perceived strengths are. So sometimes it's like, you know, this is what I know works. This is what I'm good at. You know, there was a time in comedy where it seemed like everybody, male comedians, female comedians, people who don't identify as either, all were falling into the same category of this is what an edgy joke looks like. I'm going to tell an edgy joke. And it was the same recipe of essentially what would be probably defined as punching down now by some people's standards that speak about comedy now. And however you feel about punching down, I think it's a valid thing. And I think that people should understand that, yes, there's humor that does that. And yes, you can still have that humor. Nobody's trying to take your humor away. Again, right. It's about, can you handle the consequences that come with that type of humor? Even right. being somebody that gets labeled a hack or something like that, and people are just like, you're a hacky comic because of XYZ. And it's like, cool, you can either stay in that bag and not care what people think and mm-hmm. just do you, or you switch it up and you all, I don't like that perception that I now have of myself as being a hack. Yeah. But a lot of comics, I think it's also because I love this so much. It's yeah. like when you see a musician or a singer that like is so just, they are music incarnate. They are just yeah. walking around and just, I fell so hard for comedy mm-hmm. and love it so very much that I think what also sort of makes it different for me is that every time I step on that stage, there's just so much love emanating for what I get to do, because yeah. I did have the nerve to dream big. And I think I appreciate it every time I step on that stage.
Completely, completely agree with you. In fact, what I was gonna say is that the thing that is so wonderful about you as a comedian, and I think it's the highest compliment that you could ever get as a comedian, is that you are so unapologetically you. And that is it. And the reason why you're funny is because nobody else can take what you have, because it's yes. you. You know what I mean?
Think it's, and yes. It's like, that's very important for any performer, just
of course.
To know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I've kind of been striving for that, you know, funny enough, you know, back to Scott Henry. That's something that Scott Henry told me. He saw me do stand up for the first time and he goes, "Mikey, I've seen you talk, I've seen you be funny." You know, like, cuz we met on Clubhouse. So he's like, you know, I've heard you be funny, like, you know, I've heard you make jokes here and there, but then mm-hmm. then I saw you do stand up and I was like, man, who he is who he is. Like yeah. that is exactly who you're getting. Like, you know, and I was like, man, there is no better thing that I want in this world, because the last thing I want is to be someone who's funnier offstage than onstage, or, you know, that kind of thing. And yeah. and not
or
only
people
that
tell you that it's, oh, that doesn't seem like you. And you're like, yeah, I'm telling you that that's me up there.
Yeah,
that's me. You may not want to accept that there are different parts of me,
yeah,
but that is me on that stage.
Yeah. And one of the things, you know, that I love about The Floor Is Lava, of course, you know, 90% of it being that it's hilarious, but the other 10%, which is a big 10% in my opinion, is that you take the time at the very end to be vulnerable. And oh. I absolutely adore that, because there is just no comedy, for some weird reason, it is like so difficult for us to show feelings sometimes and to be us, you know, and for just 3 to 4 minutes, I got to see who Gina really was, you know, and, yeah. and I got to see that girl who would stay up late and watch comedy specials when she was 14. And I got to see that person who really fell in love with comedy, and so much so that it became not only her passion, but like almost like her sport, where now now she's showing the world at almost an Olympic level through some streaming service or whatever that I can't say because of the SAG strike. And she is broadcasting her talent based on all of that. So yeah, just I don't know. I just wanted to say all of
Thank
that.
You.
You know. Yeah.
That definitely means so much to me, coming from another comic. And mm-hmm. there is no higher compliment than something like that, because being able to be vulnerable, I'm able to be vulnerable because I've gotten to the point of trusting myself enough on stage
yeah.
where I'm like, this is part of the experience too. I always loved specials. One of mm-hmm. my favorite moments is Ellen DeGeneres' special. I can't remember that. I always forget the name of the special, but mm-hmm. it was just after she had come out. And at the end of the special, she does this Q&A, and there's this beautiful moment with this woman in the audience who like raises her hand and gives her this story about how because Ellen came out, she had the courage to come out. And, you know, the woman starts weeping and Ellen calls her up to the stage and give or take what Ellen has become.
Sure.
In this moment, she hugged this woman and just had a private conversation with her for 2 seconds that looked just so intense and so beautiful. And it was the first time I ever got to see vulnerability mixed with comedy. And I never got that image out of my head. And I was like, one day I want to be so comfortable that I'm not afraid to be that vulnerable on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely wonderful to watch. And it's so, it's just so awesome because like the person that has feelings and the person that gets their heart broken is the same person who thinks farts are funny, you know, like it's the same person, you know? So like to be able to show that in one show is very special, you know? I have just a couple of questions left for you. But they're going to be real quick. And you can answer them any way that you want to. There's no wrong way to answer them. But the first one is, what advice would you give to your younger self if you were to meet them today?
Ooh, I would tell her to love herself.
Okay.
I would tell her to speak kindly to herself because she's going to be existing in a world where it's so easy to accept negativity, even from herself, that it's very important that she get her mind right and love herself the way she so freely gives love to everybody else.
I love that. Now, if that girl were to meet you today, what would that girl think of who you are? Would she think that you're a cool person? Would she respect you? Would she be, you know, surprised that you are where you are? You know, that kind of thing.
She would be amazed at where I am. She would be so incredibly blown away by the things that I've gotten to do. And I think there would just be a smile across her face to know that she didn't quit.
Yeah. Yeah, man. What a beautiful way to put it, man. There's no such thing as failure. It's just quitting. So don't quit. You know, just like don't quit. Just don't quit.
And if that's you do quit because it's not your thing, that's okay. It's not your thing. What's your thing? What do you care about? What lights a fire in you? Yeah. Don't quit that.
Yeah. I love it, man. Gina Brion, everybody. Where can everybody find you online?
You can find me on Instagram at gbrion, on TikTok at Gina Brion, and you can check out If I'm Coming to a City Near You on my website, ginabrioncomedy.com.
Yeah. Awesome. And for me, real quick, you can follow me at Mike Valdez. You can go to thekidfromup.com until Disney sues me for having that website domain. You're the first person to ever laugh at that website. Yeah, but anyway, there's a reason why it's in my stand-up, but you can follow me there, and you can subscribe to the podcast, tell your friends so we can grow this family and we can get more guests that are as amazing as Gina Brion. Yet I highly doubt it's going to happen
because
she's the best guest I've ever had.
It's going to happen. Tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend.
Yeah.
So that we spread the word and it's going to happen. I promise.
No, I love it. I love it. Other than that, have a great week and don't lose your sense of childlike wonder. Bye, besties.